is your ship and you are the captain. Oh, captain, let's make a deal where we both say the things that we both really feel. I feel scared and I'm starting to sink, and I only sink deeper the deeper I think.
Chapter 10, Luo Family Vacation. Shang Qinghua fosters the impossible hope that something or someone will swoop in and stop this latest mission, even though it's never happened before. Even if a miracle does pop up, the arguments that sway the system are rare and not easily stumbled upon. Even if the masters he's beholden to staunchly forbid him from taking anything resembling a vacation, personal leave, he thinks this sort of not vacation is called, he would probably still have to do the fucking mission. Airplane shooting towards the sky has no greater, no crueler, no more inescapable master in this second life than the shitty, fucking, no good system. Eat your hearts out, Yue Qingyuan and Mo Beijun. Shang Qinghua has managed to wrangle some of the potential penalties for mission dodging here out of the system, which has always been reluctant to tell him anything unless it's being mean to him, as though eternally annoyed that it's stuck with a shitty fucking no-good host like him. There's a significant point loss associated with abandoning this mission, of course. The maximum potential loss of points, as calculated by the system, could wipe out a frightening chunk of Shang Qinghua's hard-earned savings. He notices that the system doesn't tell him the minimum potential loss of points for mission dodging, no matter how much he jabs and complains. Like, the system is concerned that Shang Qinghua will try to finesse his way through the laziest route possible, if it gives him too much information. Like, just a few helping hints is a slippery slope to Shang Qinghua jailbreaking his transmigration system. Fine, the system's not wrong exactly. Shang Qinghua would absolutely hack his fucking system if he had any idea how to do that. But also, fuck the system for this restrictive bullshit. This is Shang Qinghua's transmigration experience. He should get to do things the way he wants, especially given that he's the author god of this world. Doesn't word of god mean anything anymore? None of this is canon anyway, and anything he does can't be OOC when he's the only Shang Qinghua there's ever been in this world. Other potential penalties for mission abandonment include an impact on the host's ability to earn points in the future.
Haha, what the fuck?
In his long and filthy climb to the top of Anding Peak, Shang Qinghua has dealt with, and continues to occasionally deal with, shady merchants, snake oil salesmen, slimy con men, grifters, blackmailers, shady rogue cultivators, shady sect cultivators, thieves, liars, and any number of truly, truly delightful people. He is very sure right now that the system is bending the truth here, whatever the truth may be. Unfortunately, Shang Qinghua's leverage is limited, if he has any to begin with, since the system has no physical form for him to fucking strangle the full truth out of. His only hope, really, faint though it may be, is Luo Jiahui changing her mind. The mission can't happen if the quest giver takes the quest back, right? Why does Luo Jiahui want to visit her birth family anyway? They suck. They threw her out and abandoned her when she needed them the most. Shang Qinghua hasn't met his fake in-laws yet, personally, but he knows a thing or two about family that think piety is a one-way street. And surely he'd really be doing her a favor talking her out of it. But, with the system looming over him, Shang Qinghua can't quite bring up the courage to try screwing it to the sticking place. Especially not when Luo Jiahui seems so hesitantly pleased by his agreement. She's so hopeful that her fortune really has changed for the better. So grateful for Shang Qinghua's support. Maybe the mission won't go so badly? What if Shang Qinghua talks her out of it and talks her out of reuniting with sobbing, loving parents prepared to grovel for her forgiveness? Even if her parents keep being shitty, what if Shang Qinghua talks Luo Jiahui out of a heartwarming reunion with her older brother and her younger sister? Shang Qinghua has had bad luck with birth families twice now, but he knows that doesn't mean they're all bad. He knows that other people sometimes get nice, happy families. So, Shang Qinghua holds off on all desperate measures, including his no-good idea of poking Liu Qingge for help. Luo Jiahui would really be mortified if Shang Qinghua came anywhere close to mentioning her difficult past to others, he's sure. And good old Liu Shidi hasn't really met any problem that he wasn't willing to face head-on and headbutt in the face. Liu Qingge won't advocate for this cowardly route. Even when the cowardly route is objectively the much more intelligent option, the man is stubborn. Liu Qingge just has too much honor and courage and skill. It can alternatively make the man a really great quest partner. Just point him at the bad guys and stand back. No extra effort needed. Or the worst quest partner ever. So Liu Qingge and Liu Mingyan leave without being told about the Luo family vacation mission. Liu Mingyan, apparently now embarrassed and outraged at being so easily provoked by her brother, thanks Luo Jiahui for her hospitality quietly and with great politeness. Luo Jiahui and Luo Binghe thank her for coming so sincerely that she recovers enough confidence to ask Shang Qinghua when he's going to send her another book. Shang Qinghua struggles not to laugh in her face. Ha! It's not that the request is super outrageous or unflattering, but because readers don't change in any universe, apparently. Update, update, update. Ah, what a universal constant. Unfortunately, Shang Qinghua is much too busy to write at the moment, torn between as many cruel and unfeeling masters as he is, and he's forced to apologize to one of his three fans in this world. He'd like to write something for her, he really would, but he's so busy right now. This transmigrator isn't accepting any more missions. Liu Mingyan is obviously disappointed, but Luo Binghe saves the day by scampering off to his room and bringing back one of his old books, one of the ones he knows that Liu Mingyan doesn't have back home. After some visible anxiety over parting with one of his treasures, the protagonist generously announces that Liu Mingyan can borrow it. Liu Mingyan accepts the book and thanks him politely for the gesture. Luo Binghe beams at her. Luo Jiahui smiles at them both. It's, not the same smile, unrelated by blood as they are, but also it very much is. Shang Qinghua absent-mindedly checks the system's reasoning behind these point changes. Plot hole expansion and character relationship development, apparently. But they're such minuscule shifts, as they often are, that it's hard to pay attention in the face of a new mission. Before Shang Qinghua follows the Liu siblings out, Luo Jiahui gives him an out. I would prefer that you come with us, but you don't have to, and the journey can wait until you're not so busy, Luo Jiahui says, after thanking him again for his support. Time is very precious, but the matter only feels urgent because I've been putting off asking for so long. It can wait. If we wait until I'm not busy, then we'll be waiting forever, Shang Qinghua jokes. Luo Jiahui smiles, clearly relieved. I'll make time, Shang Qinghua promises. Time with family is precious. 4 years ago, he definitely wouldn't have been able to say that at all, much less with a straight face. But things have changed. If Luo Jiahui is going to say embarrassing and vulnerable things to his face, then he can repeat some of those back to her. It's not so hard. Well, it's actually very difficult, and he kind of hates it. But Shang Qinghua is practicing, and it's worth it to see Luo Jiahui's smile widen like that. Huage is so good to us, she says again. Thank you for your help. All sister-in-law ever needs to do to get my help is ask, Shang Qinghua insists. She hugs him before he goes. All the way back up the mountain, Shang Qinghua ignores whatever equivalent to smugness the system is radiating. Well, he allows himself to think as many nasty words to it that he can come up with inside of 2 minutes. Then he goes back to ignoring it. He really wishes he could have agreed to help his fake sister-in-law without the system getting involved, ignoring the will of the author himself in order to push along its own plot. The next day, Shang Qinghua travels to the sect leader's office on Cheung Ding Peak to privately discuss taking time away from the sect for personal matters. The first of Shang Qinghua's masters quickly proves that he won't be the one to challenge the system's rulings. Shang Qinghua only gets as far as mentioning, going back home to visit family and make sure everything is all right with our important people, before sect leader Yue Qingyuan nods. The man hears out the rest of Shang Qinghua's babbling, though, all of his many apologies about leaving the sect during such important business preparations. But Shang Qinghua is watching his big bro carefully enough to spot the right micro-expressions, to know the exact moment when Chengmen Shixiang decides to allow the Luo family vacation mission to go ahead. He, chose his words very carefully. We can, of course, spare Shang Shidi from his duties for a time, if he need attend to family matters, Yue Qingyuan says, a peerless example of immortal graciousness. He even smiles, distant and indulgent, and says, arrangements will somehow continue to be made without Shang Shidi's diligent direct supervision. Are you sure? Shang Qinghua says, before he can help it. There's an issue with the water on Kuxing Peak, which is currently being investigated, and Shang Qinghua has a hunch that it could go to shit quickly back behind his back, even though he's pretty sure the water, at least, isn't haunted. Xi Jiao Peak is dealing with a literal shit problem. Monster shit. For specialty potions. It's disgusting. That could end up pissing off some pretty important business partners. Tianshu Peak is in the process of changing a longtime supplier. Tianqiao Peak is dealing with another sect accusing them of plagiarism. Wanjian Peak needs a smelter replaced. And that's just getting started. Yue Qingyuan's smile widens slightly. Shang Qinghua switches back to respectability, rather than dwell on ugly responsibilities and responsibilities that could turn ugly out of nothing more than spite. Thank you for this allowance, Changmen Xixiang. Shang Shidi's familial piety is admirable, Yue Qingyuan says. They, of course, have to discuss some of the arrangements that must be made if Shang Qinghua is to go on a personal mission at this time. Like, who's going to be put in charge of what needs to be postponed, how long he's going to be gone, and so on. Yue Qingyuan, bro among bros, goes as far as offering escort, supplies, and any other sect support to Shang Qinghua's family. But Zhang Qinghua insists that this is a personal matter. He falls back upon his sister-in-law's desire for privacy in this trying time. Yue Qingyuan acquiesces respectfully, though he assures Zhang Qinghua, with a smile, only slightly strained, that there are members of Changchong Mountain Sect who would neither gawk nor gossip. Ha ha! Zhang Qinghua kind of doubts that. Zhang Qinghua is tempted to ask for these names. He'd like names, thanks. Give him the damn names of these mythical people. But refrains in favor of doubling down on his earlier statement. Now is not the time to get into a debate about the brutally sharp and viciously thoughtless wagging tongues of the cultivation world. Many of them are profoundly unkind even before political motivations come into it. In Shang Shudi's absence, if necessary, I will call on our martial siblings to assist with preparations, Yue Qingyuan says, when the conversation turns to Zhang Qinghua's other mission. Perhaps the personal attention of a peak lord will go a long way into quelling the complaints and distrust of our friends in other sects. Ha! Zhang Qinghua definitely doubts that. Also, he really doesn't want the peak lords touching his stuff while he's gone. There's an equal chance that this will mean less work for him, and that this will actually mean more work for him when one of his martial siblings fucks something up. It's a coin toss. But, Zhang Qinghua's mind goes to another place too, and his heart immediately swells with knowing pity. Sect leader Yue Qingyuan's statement was totally normal and said in a super casual tone, with no indication of personal motivations on his handsome face. But Zhang Qinghua also happens to know that a certain peak lord is in one of his not fucking talking or looking at Yue Qingyuan unnecessarily moods. So it would make sense that around now their sect leader might be getting a little desperate for attention. Airplane shooting towards the sky knows how it is. That sounds good, Zhang Qinghua says, swallowing his pitying heart. The sect leader's office is a nice place. It's very befitting an immortal master who leads other immortal masters. The desk and shelves indicate that someone really works here, but it's not a harried or cluttered space. Unlike Zhang Qinghua's own office during busy times, suggesting that the illustrious owner still has plenty of time for lengthy contemplation on the mysteries of the universe. The workspace is clean and open, elegant in its decorations, refined in its organization, and just the right amount of whispering wealth without tipping into ostentatiousness. It's peaceful and inviting, but also a little intimidating. Zhang Qinghua is envious. This room appears to be effortlessly everything that it's supposed to be, much like the man who works here. Zhang Qinghua kind of fucking hates coming here, because he can't help but see through it now. He knows where that nice desk was commissioned from only 5 years ago, that the artifact on one of those shelves is actually an ornamental replica, and he can pick out at least one book there that he knows was written by a charlatan, who the protagonist will someday out as a cheat. He knows where they get the incense Yue Qingyuan uses, what the disciples used to clean the floors in here. Specially installed flooring by a predecessor with, in Zhang Qinghua's opinion, shit taste in decor. And which priceless decorations will be due for restoration soon. He knows the boring bureaucratic bullshit written on the papers on Yue Qingyuan's desk. Yue Qingyuan is a humble man generally, but he knows the value of appearances, and the trappings of their lofty sect take maintenance. Zhang Qinghua can see through the formidable, greatly respected man sitting behind the desk, too. Not as the man who keeps this world running, with relative smoothness, he likes to think, most of the time, but as the man who originally built it. Even if Shang Ching Hua didn't have a good reason for fucking off into the blue, maybe Yue Qingyuan would allow it anyway, just to pull Tang Chong Mountain Sect's second highest peak lord into all the political wrangling and organizational logistics happening right now. Shang Ching Hua has been playing go-between lately, as he pretty much always has, which is essentially his job. So with Shang Ching Hua away on a terrible, terrible mission, Shang Ching Hua really wants to say something here. Shen Qingqiu had another mild qi deviation earlier this year, as mild as a qi deviation can be at his level. Though, admittedly, airplane shooting towards the sky abused the qi deviation trope so hard that there is a ludicrous variety of types of qi deviation in this world, and seems to be recovering and maintaining his health now by pretending that everyone and everyone he hates doesn't exist. While the realized version of the infamous scum villain can be a masterful tactician, a formidable political player, and an adept organizer under the right circumstances, his way of doing things can leave a lot of messes for Shang Ching Hua to clean up. There's often lots and lots of placating to do. Lots of, oh yes, random minor sect leader, Peak Lord Shen Qingqiu definitely didn't mean it when he implied that you were a complete fucking moron for using fire against a monster famous for being greatly strengthened by fire to the point of reproducing exponentially. My Shuxiang must have been talking about someone else, probably that rival you hate. Anyway, have I mentioned that your ego is looking particularly handsome and, dare I say, sexy today? So, Shang Ching Hua is a little worried that if Yue Qingyuan and Shen Qingqiu share the same space for too long while he's away, he'll come back to pick up all his work again, only to find all his hard work on fire, their various alliances and arrangements already burned to a crisp, and everyone within a certain blast radius probably emotionally devastated to the point of needing medical attention. Because feeling too sad is dangerous in this world. Because a hack called airplane shooting towards the sky needed the fucking drama. Anyway, maybe he should say something to Yue Qingyuan now? He could say something. He doesn't have to hold a full intervention. He can just say something. But Shang Ching Hua doesn't say anything. Like he's never said anything. Because the desk between him and Yue Qingyuan feels like it has the length of a wide canyon. Yue Qingyuan's friendly mask has the height of a great wall. The symptoms of this problem might be Shang Ching Hua's problem, but the problem itself isn't. So Shang Ching Hua looks Yue Qingyuan in the eye, finishes discussing sect logistics, thanks him profusely for his time, his patience, his generosity, and his understanding, and then skedaddles like the shitty fucking coward he is. Really, the problem is so obvious that the only reason that Yue Qingyuan and Shen Qingqiu haven't solved it by now, given that in this realized version of Proud Immortal Demon Way, they are experienced and wise and observant immortal masters, must be because Shang Ching Hua's terrible senior martial siblings don't want to solve the problems in their relationship. Him butting into things after all these years wouldn't just be unwanted and suspicious, but probably also useless. He has no proof that things wouldn't just get worse if he stupidly got involved. Why ruin an already ruined thing? There's no point. Shen Qingqiu is probably doomed anyway, unless he can get his act together by the time Shang Ching Hua's nephew comes to join the sect. So that probably means that Yue Qingyuan is doomed too. Just taking into account the dangerous rules of heartbreak in Shang Ching Hua's shitty cultivation novel. Sorry, bros, it's not personal, but you're fucked. Shang Qinghua shakes his head all the way back to Andeng Peak. It kind of helps. Well, it doesn't help, but it's worked so far, right? He's got more important things to worry about. He's successfully managed some leave from the mission he was already doing in favor of this Luo family vacation mission. Now Shang Qinghua just has to get leave from his other master, which, well, it shouldn't be too difficult. Shang Qinghua actually hopes that it'll be less weird. Things have changed between Shang Qinghua and Mo Beijun again. Their relationship has gone through a lot of changes over the years. Mo Beijun taking over a chunk of his father's responsibilities, Shang Qinghua becoming a peak lord, Shang Qinghua secretly adopting the protagonist. But before, Shang Qinghua always had a decent understanding of why. Mo Beijun is tempestuous and difficult to read always, but Shang Qinghua had a better grasp of the overall shape of their arrangement before, well, before that night. Mo Beijun walking in on him drunk is the best clue that Shang Qinghua has when it comes to unraveling the mystery of this latest slow-moving change. Sucks that Shang Qinghua barely remembers the gist of that conversation then. Also sucks that Shang Qinghua sucks at mysteries sometimes. And that the only way of ever knowing if he's right is asking Mo Beijun. That's, never happening. Shang Qinghua leaves Changchong Mountain Sect to meet with Mo Beijun, taking the secret winding route away from the mountain in disguise, then the portal to another location. Trying not to think of the fact that Mo Beijun didn't visit Anding Peak for a solid year after that night. The Demon Lord drops by far less frequently than before, even now. Which is great, really, because it lessens their chances of being caught by nosy disciples or sensitive cultivators. But Shang Qinghua can't help but overthink it. The portal still sucks. Stepping out into a remote location, totally lost, also still sucks. Today, it's the dark and rocky bank of a slow river, surrounded by tall, thin trees with bark patterned in a way that resembles eyes. It's cool because Mo Beijun doesn't do heat, but it's not quite cold. The sky above is clear and starry, with a light display of beautiful red and purple ripples, which means that they must be somewhere very close to the border between the demon and human realms. Shang Qinghua hopes they're on the human side. He thinks they are. Mo Beijun is standing at the edge of the river, on the rocks, standing out against the night sky by the white fur of his dark cloak. He turns and, he's still so fucking dangerous in every way. It's really not fair. It also appears that today is going to be one of those days where Shang Qinghua's eyes are not allowed to look below the neck because Mo Beijun has decided to wear his robes relatively open at the front today. Shang Qinghua can't afford to be distracted by that enormous chest on display. Shang Qinghua would really like to know what goes on in the Demon Lord's head sometimes. "My king," he greets and bows.
"Shang Qinghua,"
Mo Beijun says. The name thing. That's, one of the changes. Actually being acknowledged and addressed, even if it's usually just the once. That didn't ever happen before. It's not friendly, it's not happy, and Shang Qinghua can't help but read an edge of warning in it, repressing the shiver ready to go down his spine. But it's still a greeting by name. For a while, several years actually, Shang Qinghua wasn't totally sure that Mo Beijun actually knew his name. Shang Qinghua takes the acknowledgement as permission to end the bow and begin his report, unable yet again to deliver his information in anything resembling a cool manner. "My king, I have much to tell you. That warlord in the eastern lands of the demon realm who claims to have control over the weather, the one who's moving northwards towards your clan's territories, I believe she's achieved this by uncovering an ancient heavenly demon weapon capable of stirring typhoons." See, Zhang Chenghua has always informed Mo Beijun of absences like this, making himself useful first, then revealing that the sect requires him to do something that will unfortunately make him temporarily unavailable. Nothing to be done about it. It wasn't Zhang Chenghua's idea. Too late to stop it. The idea is to put Mo Beijun, who probably just wants to fucking leave already and save his ears by the end of their meetings, in a good enough mood that he won't give a shit. In practice, totally unclear whether or not Mo Beijun has good moods. Mo Beijun listens today. He doesn't seem to be in a bad mood. Good moods are of questionable existence, when the closest thing Zhang Chenghua has ever seen the young demon lord come to is probably cruelly mocking. However, it is always very clear that Mo Beijun definitely has bad moods.
"This technique will neutralize the weapon,"
Mo Beijun says afterwards. I believe so, my king. According to my research, this technique should work. It seems very logical. This is a copy of the scroll I found. However, I have no other sources, and it is possible that the warlord has found a way to compensate for the weapon's weaknesses. Zhang Chenghua answers, kind of pissed off about the whole thing. Firstly, he actually had to go find a scroll on this particular weapon, which was a lot more work than writing his own scroll and claiming that it's some deceased archaeologist's life's work. So annoying! The system is a lot stricter than it used to be on that front, even for the little things, citing plot holes and continuity errors. Sometimes, way more often than he probably should, honestly, Zhang Chenghua will just take the point loss, but the system is always such a jerk about it. Second, he's pretty sure that this is a case of a chapter 500 and something villain who's managed to dig up a chapter 400 and something weapon. Sure, this is a weapon that's been passed from demon to demon by bloodshed instead of being sealed in some ancient temple, so it's not unreasonable that it's causing trouble in the background now. But still, what if the warlord gets killed? Zhang Chenghua doesn't want to lose more points because some scum villain couldn't just wait for the protagonist to show up, went digging in other people's plot lines out of boredom, and gets themselves smacked down by Mo Beijun. Seriously, System Pro, what the fuck? Do your job! Mo Beijun accepts the scroll that Zhang Chenghua offers him, checks it, then nods. Zhang Chenghua goes over a few more points before finally letting Mo Beijun know that he's going to be unable to be contacted for the duration of his latest mission. "My king, I'm very sorry," he elaborates. "I'm going to be surrounded by other humans at all times, and I don't think it will be very wise to try to sneak away. Very last minute. I'll make it up to you. I swear, my king, I'll be back as soon as possible."
"What is this mission?"
Mo Beijun asks. Zhang Chenghua has steadied himself for a reaction, so he manages not to wince. He was hoping that the demon lord would be his usual apathetic self about this, probably even glad for a break from meeting with his unscrupulous, cowardly human spy. But, of course Mo Beijun wants to know what's taking Zhang Chenghua away from Changchong Mountain Sect's current affairs. There's an implication of urgency and importance to a new mission popping up like this. Mo Beijun can be sharp when it's inconvenient. Zhang Chenghua sighs. "It's very petty, my king. A troublesome meeting with one of the Peak Lord's personal cooks, which no one else can be trusted to smooth out," he complains. "Things are so tense on the mountain right now. I think the sect leader wants me away in hopes of smoothing things over with one of the other Peak Lords, who has, a very out-of-sight, out-of-mind temper. Mo Beijin's expression turns unimpressed. Unglamorous work for the lord of an unglamorous peak, Shangqing Hua grumbles, before immediately changing the subject to any new tasks Mo Beijin might have for him, apologizing profusely for any potential delay to the demon lord's bidding, promising results as soon as possible.
Complete the tasks you have already been given before begging to take on more,
Mo Beijun says, which is as close as the demon lord will probably ever come to. My evil bidding can wait for you to finish your inane shit. Ah, very wise. Thank you, my king.
Mo Beijun stares at him, as piercing as ever, and
Shangqing Hua sweats while waiting for the demon lord to say something. He thinks he knows this cold, blank expression. This is the one that means that Mo Beijun actually intends to say something, but is either making Shangqing Hua sweat because he can, or mentally paring down his statement so that he doesn't go over his daily word limit. Or, so Shangqing Hua has always assumed.
You have no further to rise within your own sect,
Mo Beijun says. No, Shangqing Hua agrees, uncertain as to where this is going, certain already that he's not going to like it. Not unless the sect leader dies or something.
Do you intend to dispose of your sect leader?
Mo Beijun says, with the same matter-of-fact casualness that other people might use to ask, did you intend to eat that last slice of cake? Or, do you intend on going shopping later this week? No, Shangqing Hua says. No. Firstly, though he could maybe assassinate Yue Qingyuan in the same way that he could maybe assassinate Mo Beijun, he has no idea how the system would react to that. Secondly, Yue Qingyuan dying will mean a lot of trouble for Changchong Mountain Sect. So much. Chongding Peak will manage to govern itself and choose a new future sect leader through its current hierarchy and predetermined sect traditions, but someone with real authority will have to lead the sect and manage the sect leader's duties until the next generation. And, with their current setup, by the next highest Peak Lord, that's Shun Qing Chu. What a disaster! Thirdly, Shangqing Hua has no idea how, and even more fear towards how Shun Qing Chu would react to the death of Yue Qingyuan. Well, he's narrowed it down to badly, but he's having trouble making predictions any more accurately than that. Fourthly, even if Shun Qing Chu didn't have a dangerous emotional attachment and could be trusted not to self-destruct, Shangqing Hua has no doubt that the bulk of the work would really fall to him. Shun Qing Chu and Wei Qing Wei might both rank above him, technically, but they really can't be trusted to know what they're doing. Sometimes Shangqing Hua and Yue Qingyuan exchange a look that says, you are the only other motherfucker here who can keep this sect from imploding on a daily basis. But to be honest, sometimes I don't even fully trust you to know what you're doing here. The last thing Shangqing Hua needs right now is more work. Fifthly, and most importantly, Shangqing Hua doesn't want to speed up Yue Qingyuan's death if it has to happen at all. Zhonglin Shixiang is a bro, an unrepentant asshole, here to get the damn job done sometimes, yeah, but still a bro, a nice guy. Shangqing Hua actually likes the man, when he's not feeling unspeakably guilty over the sect leader's guilt. Sixthly, what the fuck? Mo Beijun looks unsurprised, possibly especially unimpressed, by Shangqing Hua's continued failure to make assassination plans. Shangqing Hua suspects that his lack of conventional power-grubbing ambition these days, ever since becoming Peak Lord, makes the Demon Lord suspicious is maybe the word for it.
Is it your lack of strength that holds you back?
Mo Beijun asks. No?
Would you request such a task of me?
Mo Beijun demands. Shang Qinghua can't disguise his shock. He can't even bring himself to ask Mo Beijun to go miracle cure flower picking for him in the demon realm. Did his best to claw to the top of Anding Peak using his own wits and cheats rather than beg for help. And the Demon Lord is asking him if he would send out the future Northern Demon King on an assassination like he's the protagonist, ordering around his right-hand man? The audacity of a request like that. Yue Qingyuan versus Mo Beijun. Shang Qinghua isn't actually sure who would win. That was a popular debate on the forums for Proud Immortal Demon Way. One much more interesting than the various best wife arguments or the various rants on the writing skills, or lack thereof, of airplane shooting towards the sky. Since it was pretty clear that the protagonist could wipe the floor with either of them. Shang Qinghua has never seen either of them fight full out and tends to count himself pretty fucking lucky to have kept away from the action. Anything that could give Yue Qingyuan or Mo Beijun trouble would slaughter him. Thinking about it now, Shang Qinghua doesn't want to know who would win. No, I would never dare to make such a request, my king, Shang Qinghua insists. I don't want to kill him in the first place. All it would mean for me is grief and chaos, my king. And it would... My king is very strong, of course, but Yue Qingyuan was involved in the sealing of Tianlangjun, and such an encounter would be explosive. Mo Beijun appears to consider this. He doesn't look offended by Shang Qinghua, suggesting that Yue Qingyuan just might be more OP than him. I count myself fortunate enough to be the Lord of Anding Peak now, Shang Qinghua continues. Truly, it is the best position in which to serve you, my king. If I was acting sect leader, my actions would be watched much too closely for our arrangement.
And what do you wish from this arrangement?
Mo Beijun asks. Shang Qinghua really wishes that the Demon Lord would stop fucking asking him this. He wants to live. Isn't that enough? He definitely hasn't changed his mind on that front. Shang Qinghua bows. To serve you for the rest of my life, my king. Mo Beijun's reactions to this answer change, depending on the day and the place and possibly the weather for all Shang Qinghua fucking knows. And today he seems annoyed by it. Like Shang Qinghua's lifelong loyalty isn't enough for him. From the very beginning, Shang Qinghua remembers the Demon Lord mockingly questioning the worth of the loyalty of a person like him. He likes to think that he's really proved his usefulness by now. Shang Qinghua maintains his respectful posture and waits. He's expecting Mo Beijun to dismiss him, but instead the Demon Lord reaches out, and Shang Qinghua can't help the panic that shoots through him. Oh no, what the fuck is happening now? He wavers, briefly, but manages to stay deathly still as Mo Beijun's hand touches the underside of his chin, until the Demon Lord lifts it. Mo Beijun's skin is cold, and that coldness seems to spread to Shang Qinghua quickly. Or maybe it's the panic. It's probably the panic. Shang Qinghua has enough trouble with looking respectfully, without Mo Beijun forcing the issue, thanks. Mo Beijun's gaze is really much too piercing, especially at a close range. Physical contact is rare between them these days. Mo Beijun has not hit Shang Qinghua in any way over 4 years. Not a flick, not a push, even a warning shove to send Shang Qinghua to his knees to remember his place. No icy powers to enforce the Demon Lord's personal space, or to make Shang Qinghua's memory work faster either. Not even when Shang Qinghua accidentally gave him bad information about a rival, and Mo Beijun was visibly super fucking angry. even though he still totally flattened that loser. Which totally convinced Shang Ching-Hua that the Demon Lord was considering just getting rid of him and being done with their arrangement. So he scrambled to double his efforts as a loyal informant for the next several months. This is a change which, overall, Shang Ching-Hua totally prefers. Mo Beijun's strange distance has been pretty great. Just fantastic. Shang Ching-Hua totally approves. If only he could stop waiting for the catch.
And you would be content with only that?
Mo Beijun asks. Is he being contemptuous? He's scowling and he definitely sounds a little contemptuous. Although that could totally be because contemptuous towards all other beings is almost for sure Mo Beijun's default state of being. Shang Ching-Hua can't speak immediately. He would really fucking like it if his life could just go on like this indefinitely, actually. He could be content with all the different sides of his life never meeting. No plot advancing on them all to ruin everything that he's managed to get for himself. No shitty, no good system would be great, though. No icy demon lord who would probably gut his sect for kicks would also be good. Mo Beijun removes his hand. Without waiting any longer for the answer, Shang Ching-Hua can't manage to force up his throat. It's impossible to tell what the demon lord makes of his inability to answer. Shang Ching-Hua would interpret that expression as more annoyance, maybe?
You may go,
Mo Beijun says. Thank you, my king, Shang Ching-Hua says quietly. The portal opens behind him with a wave of Mo Beijun's hand, and Shang Ching-Hua backs away respectfully. As he turns, bracing himself for walking face first into extremely unpleasant demon energy warping space, over the crackle and hiss of power, he hears a sound, almost like a flutter of paper. Shang Ching-Hua glances over his shoulder, wondering if something has come through the leaves above them, or if Mo Beijun is mistreating his carefully written scrolls. The man better fucking not be doing that, otherwise Shang Ching-Hua will definitely think some very strongly worded things. All he sees is the Demon Lord standing there impassively, watching him go. Shang Ching-Hua steps through the portal, glad to be going. That went well, he dares to think. Shang Ching-Hua delegates the duties that he can't put on pause, crosses managers and buyers and sellers and disciples and crafters, and tells Peng Hongpeng and Lin Wenjiao to insist the help of disciple Sticky Fingers for some light thieving if anyone starts being shitty about handing over their paperwork. Hu Shifu? Peng Hongpeng says, clearly pretending not to know who he's talking about. Shifen Shimei, got it, Lin Wenjiao says, because way too many of Shang Ching-Hua's contemporaries like their shitty little power trips. And they're off. Without anything standing in their way, the Luo family vacation mission takes off before Shang Ching-Hua is really ready for it. He wasn't kidding, though, when he said to Luo Jiahui that they'd be waiting forever if they waited until he was ready for this. Who's ever really ready to meet their in-laws? Shang Ching-Hua has never met in-laws before. Given his track record and shitty situation, these may be the only in-laws he ever meets. He wants to get it right on the first try, for Luo Jiahui and Luo Bingha's sake. Luo Bingha shares none of the adult's nervousness over the trip, though his mother has been careful to explain to him that her family might not be happy to see them at first. Luo Jiahui and Shang Ching-Hua do not build up a narrative of loving grandparents who have been longing for a grandson to spoil rotten, a decision settled only in a look. Luo Bingha is apparently excited for the journey itself rather than the destination. Shang Ching-Hua has planned out their route and distracts his nephew by telling him about interesting foods that he thinks might interest the two best cooks in all the world, about a majestic bridge built over the Luochuan River that they're going to walk over, and about other little sights to see, and scents to smell and flavors to taste along the way. It's been a while since Shang Ching-Hua was regularly on the road, so he doesn't make many concrete promises, but he does promise at least one nice souvenir of Bingha's choosing. If Luo Jiahui's parents don't end up spoiling the little protagonist rotten, which is really the only reasonable choice, then Shang Ching-Hua obviously has to step up his uncling. And if they do start spoiling the little protagonist, Shang Ching-Hua won't be outdone. As they travel, it's easier to focus on the cuteness of the protagonist rather than stew in doubt and fear. Though Shang Ching-Hua is a very good multitasker, if he does say so himself, and is plenty able to do both. Luo Jiahui appears to be using this focus on looking after the baby technique herself, at which she is extremely skilled, if not a master. Shang Ching-Hua actually keeps himself from obsessing over meeting his in-laws like a nervous wreck by being a bit of a paranoid wreck instead, looking out for signs that the system is luring them into a trap or that his own shitty world-building is about to screw their Luo family vacation over. Luo Bingha unknowingly helps them both by being extremely adorable. Even his complaining that he misses his own bed, his mother's cooking, and seeing Granny Sun is adorable. Even his whining when his legs hurt is pretty adorable. Cute little baby suffering. Shang Ching-Hua would exhaust himself trying to carry them all by sword, an emergency measure they've agreed, but he's definitely strong enough to carry a tired 6-year-old on his shoulders. The tiny protagonist is still flatteringly impressed by his uncle's enormous height. Luo Bingha is in charge of his own little pack, which he packed himself, which only contains his dolls, tied to the pack with string. Thanks, Luo Jiahui. Snacks, and whatever neat-looking rocks or leaves he picks up off the side of the road. And he looks after it as seriously as though he's been put in charge of all of their money. He judges potential souvenirs from street vendors like he's deciding on a weapon to replace the Jin Mo sword, his future golden finger, which is extremely at odds with him occasionally politely introducing himself to random strangers, waitresses, vendors, innkeepers, street performers, and then excitedly telling his new friend his life story. Getting away from the sect like this is kind of nice, so long as Shang Ching-Hua doesn't think about how much work is building up in his absence. Unfortunately, even the protagonist's halo of cuteness can't stop Luo Jiahui's anxiety from rising as they get closer and closer to their destination. She stares off into space a lot, very relatable, and becomes increasingly, kind of hilariously, judgmental about the food they buy in a very passive-aggressive way. She wouldn't have personally chosen to put two particular vegetables together in a certain dish. The sauce of a different dish, traditionally, isn't nearly so soupy. The spice of another dish almost seems to be compensating for the rest of the meal. Luo Bingha is oblivious. Shang Ching-Hua, who deals with intersect and intrasect politics enough to know passive aggression, is definitely not. The passive-aggressive criticism turns from the food to the places they stay, to the places they pass through, and Shang Ching-Hua's amusement turns to concern. He still finds the comments funny, more often than not, but that's his shitty character. It's not really Luo Jiahui's character. He can't keep the surprise and worry off his face when a comment about one of their innkeepers turns downright mean-spirited. Luckily, Luo Bingha has already passed out for the night, but Luo Jiahui catches his expression and they stare at each other. Luo Jiahui has a deer-in-headlights look before she slumps, dispirited by her own unkindness. "I'm being ungrateful and inconsiderate towards our hosts," she says quietly. "They're not listening. At least, I hope they're not," Shang Qinghua jokes. Luo Jiahui looks even more downcast. "Sister-in-law is stressed," he offers. "It's all right." "I should be more grateful," Luo Jiahui insists. Shang Qinghua hesitates, then says, "Sister-in-law doesn't have to be grateful not to be treated worse." And it is painfully clear, in the quiet of their borrowed room, that he is not just talking about their current host. Luo Jiahui gives him a narrow-eyed look. "Brother-in-law should take his own advice," she says quietly, challengingly, before, clearly, immediately regretting it. "I'm sorry, I'm not wrong," Shang Qinghua admits. He sits down on the bed and gestures for Luo Jiahui to sit next to him. After a second, Luo Jiahui comes over, leaning into him. Shang Qinghua wraps an arm around her shoulders. All of the places they visit immediately assume that Shang Qinghua and his fake sister-in-law are husband and wife, traveling with their young son. And neither Shang Qinghua nor Luo Jiahui have really bothered to correct these assumptions. Less shitty questions that way. "When I left home, I thought I was more than old enough to make all the important decisions by myself," Luo Jiahui murmurs. "I thought that I knew just as well, if not better, than those who were much older and wiser than I was. My parents, my brother, and now my younger sister is almost as old as I was when I left, and I can't think of her as anything but a child." "You were a child, too. Your parents should have been more understanding," Shang Qinghua says awkwardly. "Even if they didn't really understand, they should have listened." "My parents weren't interested in listening." Airplane shooting towards the skies, parents had encouraged him to find ways to entertain himself as soon as he was old enough not to bother them for long stretches of time, and then had no interest in any of the things Airplane found entertaining, like shitty novels and crappy games and internet forums. He liked things that were good for nothing but wasting time. His parents tried to humor him sometimes on their good days, but he had his head pretty firmly in the clouds. "They thought I should focus on real things," Shang Qinghua says. Luo Jiahui makes a dismissive sound. "You're a peak lord now. Is that made up now?" Shang Qinghua laughs softly. "Most things are a little bit made up." "Well," Luo Jiahui sniffs, "it's still real to me." Shang Qinghua wants to laugh, long and loud and probably hysterically, but takes his fake sister-in-law's hand instead. "Ah, then that's the only opinion that matters to me," he says. "Proud immortal demon Wei can get fucked. It was written by an idiot anyway." Checking the system's latest notes in case they're about to be in danger, he skims over plot hole expansion and character motivation development. Ah, well, so long as it's not mission objective survive again, he doesn't give a shit. He still hasn't forgiven the system for that bullshit when he met Mo Bei Jun. Luo Jiahui squeezes his hand. "You're a good sister," Shang Qinghua tells her, meaning it more than he can say. Probably, especially with the system looming over him. "And a good mother, and a very good friend, and definitely the best cook I have ever met." Luo Jiahui huffs a little wetly. "Brother-in-law is biased." "Ah, yes, but still right," Shang Qinghua insists with good humor. "If some people can't see my sister as a good person, then that's their fault." Luo Jiahui's real hometown is nice enough. Idyllic countryside, well-kept streets, a very good distance. Far, far away from the demon realm. Xiang Qinghua and Luo Bingha are going to go hang out in the market square, while Luo Jiahui first goes to see if her parents or siblings are receptive to apologies, just in case things get ugly. The protagonist is sitting on Xiang Qinghua's shoulders again, tugging absentmindedly on his uncle's hair, while his mother tells him that it's just polite to let people know before coming to visit. "I'll be back very soon, hopefully," Luo Jiahui says. "Behave for your uncle, all right?" "All right," Luo Bingha says. "Huaga, you may buy him one sweet. Only one, all right?" "All right," Xiang Qinghua says. "I mean it. Don't spoil his appetite," Luo Jiahui insists, probably anxious about her son potentially refusing her family's food. "There will be plenty to eat later, whether or not... wherever we eat later, there will be plenty of food, all right?" "We'll eat lots of food and compliment our hosts lots, right, Bingha?" "I know to be polite," Luo Bingha says, annoyed. "I know, you're very polite, Bing Bing," Luo Jiahui agrees, reaching up to pat his back. "My little gentleman." The town market is active enough this afternoon, but not so crowded that they have to fight for space. Luo Jiahui, knowing her way around, leads them to the space where she intends to meet them and points out the tea house where she'll look for them otherwise. Xiang Qinghua is in the middle of effusively promising that he will not make off with her baby, stuff him with too many sweets, or otherwise spoil him rotten in her absence, when Luo Jiahui's head snaps towards something she must have caught out of the corner of her eye. Xiang Qinghua follows her gaze to see a middle-aged woman walking through the market, coming away from the tea house Luo Jiahui just pointed out, with graying brown hair and a familiar shape to her face. "Ah," Xiang Qinghua thinks, after realizing that this woman looks very much like Luo Jiahui, only about 30 years older. He'd have known who this woman is by Luo Jiahui's shocked, terrified expression, if nothing else. Luo Jiahui swallows visibly, then walks in front of the woman. "Oh, this is happening now? This is happening now? Now? Oh, fuck!" The woman moves to go around Luo Jiahui before doing a double take and stopping in her tracks, taking on an expression like she's seen a ghost. "Hello, Mama," Luo Jiahui says. "I would like to apologize and make amends, if I may." The woman blinks, then looks away and moves to walk around Luo Jiahui. Xiang Qinghua's heart drops to his stomach. Luo Jiahui scrambles to put herself in front of her mother again. "If Mama doesn't want this to happen in public, then I'm happy to visit later in private and make amends to the whole family," she says quickly. "I'm very sorry, and I would like to introduce my son to my family. His name is Bingha, and he's a very good boy." "I won't give you a handout," the woman declares. "Mama, I don't need a handout. My fortunes have changed, and..." The woman looks around, then narrows in on her daughter's family, and shoots Xiang Qinghua a hateful look. Not the worst one Xiang Qinghua has ever suffered through in this life, especially since it's not coming with any gruesome death threats or assassination attempts. But it's still not great to receive. He's in disguise, meaning that he's not dressed as a Peak Lord. But still, he can't look that unscrupulous. He knows this because Luo Jiahui made a point of fussing over everyone's appearances this morning. "I only have one daughter and one grandchild," Luo Jiahui's mother declares, so contemptuously that even the likes of Mo Bei Jun might be impressed, if the demon lord could be impressed by anything. "I don't know you or your bastard." "Ah, so it's like that." Shang Qinghua is more surprised than he ought to be, really. This sucks.